Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Della Torre.
Hey there, everybody. My name is J.C. Della Torre.
And I'm Rita Della Torre.
And this is Transmissions from Atlantis, episode 131.
And man, do we have a jam-packed show for you today.
Absolutely we do. It's going to be a crazy, crazy show.
Especially since, you know, this is post-San Diego Comic-Con, so as you can imagine, there were a lot of news.
Yep, which we'll be covering mostly in our rapid-fire segment, but man, we're going to have to be quick in our rapid-fire segment. We may only be able to do, like, maybe one or two comments per
and
thing.
And you skipped something I just noticed.
What did I skip?
The Voltron trailer.
Oh, yes, I did forget that. So we'll have to put that in there somewhere for sure. In addition to that, we're going to be talking to Dragon Con media director Dan Carroll. Dragon Con's right around the corner, folks, so it's going to be time to start talking Dragon Con.
And for our main topic this week, we're going to be talking about two movies that we saw the past couple weeks. Valerian and War for the Planet of the Apes.
And with War, we're actually going to be talking about that whole little Apes trilogy that the reboot that they did. So
because we only just recently watched it.
Yeah, we only recently watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes to go along with War of the Planet of the Apes. So we're going to be basically talking about the whole trilogy, but mostly War.
That sounds like Sam Mingo. We're going to be talking about the whole world, but mostly America.
Exactly. Of course, in Doctor Who, there has been some Doctor Who news. The Christmas special trailer was released, and we're also going to be talking about the Doctor's daughter.
You remember Jenny?
Yes, has something happened with Jenny? And there's also some interesting companion news for Jodie Whittaker. Very, very surprising news. And of course, there was a death in the Doctor Who family. We'll talk about that as well. So let's stop fooling around and get straight to it with
rapid fire.
Fire?
Fire?
Fire! All right, rapid fire. And we got to be rapid fire because we got too much to talk about.
Yep. All right. So first off, the Voltron trailer for season 3 came out during San Diego Comic-Con. Oh my God, I can't wait for more Voltron.
Yep. It looks really, really great. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with this particular season because they left it on such an interesting cliffhanger. So.
That's true. But the good news is we don't have long to wait because the episodes are coming out all at once August 4th in less than 2 weeks.
Crap.
All right, next up, the Stranger Things Season 2 trailer.
Now, talk about amazing. Oh, my God. Dragon's Lair. You had Dragon's Lair. Then, of course, the Upside Down. Looks like it's getting really upside down. And Eleven might be coming back.
Oh, Eleven's coming back for sure. The show wouldn't be the Stranger Things without Eleven.
And I got to say, I loved that the trailer had
Thriller
with the whole Vincent Price speech and everything. That was awesome.
Oh, that was amazing. There's so much of my childhood chucked up in just the trailer? Yes. I can't wait for the whole season.
Absolutely. Up next, Westworld Season 2 trailer.
All right, so Westworld Season 2 looks to be...
Nothing but carnage?
Nothing but carnage. It is going to be, if you guys will excuse the language, Jason, we'll have to bleep this. It's going to be more f***ed up than the first one.
Thank you for that. Yeah, you don't have to edit stuff.
Oh, you can beep it.
Whatever.
Okay, so we saw the trailer.
For Spielberg's
Ready Player One.
Oh my God!
This is the future, folks. This is what our future is probably going to be. And I don't care. I can't wait for it. I want that whole immersive VR. You know what this reminds me of? Sword Art Online.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. I mean, I think the whole premise behind Ready Player One is probably just like Sword Art Online. The only difference is all the pop culture references that are in there. I mean, we saw Freddy.
Oh, the robot from
Iron Giant, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there you can tell that there's going to be a lot of different properties that Spielberg probably got permission to use.
This is going to be a film that's going to have so many Easter eggs in it. You're going to be spending a year just trying to figure them all out.
Yep, and of course, we've been talking a lot about Star Trek Discovery, and the Star Trek Discovery trailer came out, and you know what? I went from not expecting much out of it to being very optimistic about it, because that trailer looked fantastic.
This is a show, folks, that just months ago, we were debating whether this was ever going to air or not.
Right. And now, I mean, just seeing that trailer, it looks phenomenal. I mean, it looks like maybe one of the best Star Trek shows I've ever seen.
Agreed. All right, moving on. The Walking Dead Season 8. It is time for a war, people.
Yep, and of course, the first thing you see is Negan talking to Father Gabriel and saying, I hope you have your crapping pants on because you're about to crap your pants. But a little bit more colorful metaphor.
Just quick thing, though. Right at the end of the trailer, when you see old Rick, people, don't think
too much of it.
It's obviously a dream sequence.
And obviously, Walking Dead is not ending this season. So even if, for some crazy odd reason, old man Rick is the way that they're going to end the series, which they're not, because I think that people would riot if they did that whole Bobby Ewing thing. But if that was the way they were going to end it, it's not going to be this year.
Nope.
So obviously, it's a dream sequence. So stop getting worked up.
All right, Stargate Origins.
Yes, we have new Stargate. The Iris is opening. Well, technically, it's a prequel, so the Iris is still closed, but it opened at some point, I guess.
It's funny, because the majority of our favorite cons have been slowly phasing out their Stargate tracks, and now they might have to bring them back.
Well, not necessarily, because this isn't a full series, you know, with, like, full episodes. This is a web series, so web series are typically 10 to 15 minutes in length each episode, so you're not going to see like a 48-minute episode or anything like that. So, not to get too excited, but it is going to be interesting to kind of see Stargate back, and it's supposed to focus around the lady that
Catherine.
It focuses around Catherine, whose father obviously discovered the Stargate, and she was the one that kind of recruited Daniel Jackson and that whole thing. So, we get to hear her story.
Next up, Final Space is a new animated series that's been picked up by TBS, and one of the voice actors is going to be none other than
David Tennant.
Woohoo!
And I gotta say, you know, obviously David Tennant has transitioned himself into voice acting because he seems to be involved in all kinds of voice acting projects now.
Scrooge McDuck in the new upcoming DuckTales reboot.
Yep, and there was a few other animated films that he did prior to the DuckTales, so I think that seems to be the route that he wants to go now.
Yeah, and all the more for him. There's a lot of good jobs in that.
Yep, alright, so sorry we kept the rapid fire brief, but we just had to do it. So coming up next, we're going to have our interview with Dan Carroll, and then after that, we are talking Valerian and War for the Planet of the Apes.
When one speaks of the perfect symmetry between science fiction, fantasy, and horror podcasting, with a special emphasis on Doctor Who, one should become a connoisseur of Transmissions from Atlantis, featuring JC and Rita Delatorre. While both will have a passionate and vigorous argument on the subject of the day, they do so with the utmost class.
Harry Potter fan that thinks they're the only fandom that has passionate fans.
That's a bunch of crap.
You know what? That is bullcrap. Harry Potter fans do not believe that way, and I don't even know where you're pulling that
from.
Well,
that's absolutely what you just said. The whole point. Prove that point.
Respect.
What? That wasn't stupid.
You're stupid.
You're stupid.
And dignity.
Commander Riker here. I'm by the book. Yeah.
Prime Directive kind of
Prime
guy.
Prime Directive! Join
Transmissions from Atlantis weekly at transmissionsfromatlantis.com and part of the ESO network. Yes, it's quite good, really.
Mr. Pop.
Eat.
Transmission has been received. Now uploading.
Alright folks, you know it's that time of year. Dragon Con is right around the corner, and of course the first interview we have to have every single year is with the media relations director himself, Dan Carroll. Dan, welcome.
Guys, thank you so much for having me back on Transmissions from Atlantis.
Yeah, we love having you on, and you know we need to have you on a little bit more often than just yearly on Dragon Con. You know, because we like you as a person, Dan, so we can have you on more than just Dragon Con.
And I have opinions about so many other TV shows and movies. And this has been a year for talking about interesting things. And how's everything going with your Kickstarter?
Everything went great. We actually made our goal, and you know we're in post production for the film, and it's. It's coming along. Our music guy is doing his thing, and
it should be done soon. We're hoping that we can get everything wrapped up by the end of September.
Yeah, right around Dragon Con. We should be wrapping up the final cut, and then we start shopping it around.
That is amazing. That is so great. But don't let me stop you from talking about Dragon Con.
Of course not. So. What's going on? Anything interesting happening with Dragon Con this year?
Well, a lot of things interesting going on. One of the things that's been really interesting is to watch the way we've consolidated some of our tracks. Our tracks are our programming units. They get put in one room, and they go nearly 24 hours a day, and they focus on very specific things. And this year, we've made a decision to have our tracks focus more on genres and fandoms rather than specific creators, and we've said goodbye to the Whedonverse track. His stuff is still obviously being covered in our American Media track, his TV work, and for the Avengers and the comics track. Then we also have we've said goodbye this year to the Tolkien track too. We all love The Lord of the Rings. We love The Hobbit. Some of us, including myself, love the Silmarillions, the films, the movies. Heck, you know, I'm a big fan of the soundtrack to the original Lord of the Rings cartoon movie by Ralph yes. Bakshi.
Oh, I know.
Of course.
It's one of my favorite pieces.
Wait, was it Nine Fingers? Was it Frodo?
Frodo of the Nine Fingers.
No. You're talking Rankin Bass. Return of the King with Frodo of the Nine Fingers. What I'm talking about is the original, the rotoscoped version from the early 80s or 79, done by the great Ralph Bakshi.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
No, me neither.
It goes, I cannot sing, so I'm not going to hum it for you, but it's really, really nice. Rosenberg did the music for it. It's something I love. So Lord of the Rings is part of my life. It's part of the life of everybody at Dragon Con. But one of the things that we wanted to do was a few years back, the Wheel of Time track was folded into the fantasy fiction. So what we did was we took that Wheel of Time out. We took Lord of the Rings and we found a home for Game of Thrones where we can focus on that awesome genre of Lord of the Rings, the Chronicles of Thomas Covenant. So much fantastic work, the Wheel of Time, all of it rolling in. And the Tolkien track, and all the fun Tolkien events are still going to be carrying on, and Evening of Bree, and so many other things that people loved about the Tolkien track. It just gives us an opportunity to move away from the the individual creator tracks and move into something a little broader in terms of our programming, because the breadth of programming at Dragon Con, nobody can say that we do not try to cover everything. Right. We do try to cover everything.
So with the Tolkien track and Game of Thrones and all that, which track is that all falling
into?
It
is now called Epic Fantasy.
Epic Fantasy.
I like that.
Epic Fantasy, and it's run by the amazing Jennifer Liang. Jennifer's known throughout the Atlanta region and, you know, I'm going to say the world for her work with the Wheel of Time and running JordanCon. And interesting, JordanCon also is, you know, it's a show that many people with DragonCon are associated with. A few years back, they presented an amazing award to our own Pat Henry. For his contribution to fandom here in the Southeast. Pat was one of our founders, and he's currently the president of DragonCon Incorporated. So what they found there was that they branched out there, and that's great, because Jennifer's got this great background. Not only is she strong in the Wheel of Time, she's strong and very respectful of Lord of the Rings and huge fan of Game of Thrones, and she's just understands epic fantasy, and she understands how to program a convention. And we wish her the best of luck, but we have all the faith in the world that Epic Fantasy is just going to be amazing this year.
Very cool.
Definitely. So one of the things that I found interesting is it looks like you guys are allowing some limited Walk of Fame interviews, and that's a first, isn't it? I don't remember you guys ever allowing that before.
Well, there's no interviews on the Walk of Fame. What we are doing is, and I don't know if this is necessarily something for your show, but I'm going to put it out, because a lot of folks, a small number, I would say roughly a third of the people who come to DragonCon as reporters have always been allowed to request guest interviews.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
All we're doing is dividing that into three different categories of guests.
Okay.
So the first category is a Walk of Fame guest. There will be no interviews and no photography. There's no photography for anybody. If I were to pull out a camera on the Walk of Fame, I would be stopped and asked to put away my camera.
See, that's where I was getting a little confused, because I know that it said that Walk of Fame guests, so I was like, what, are they actually allowing interviews on the Walk of Fame?
No, we are not.
Okay,
I'm
glad we cleared that up. Okay, great.
No. Let's go ahead and be clear, but we needed a way to, here's the funny thing, we needed a way to differentiate actor and celebrity guest interviews with comic interviews with the writers and the comic artists and the writers. They're guests. They're guests and they're celebrities.
Yeah.
But they're not the Walk of Fame celebrities. And originally we were calling them media guests. And going through the paperwork, I realized that we were calling them media interviews. And I said, Sam, maybe we need a different phrase, because all the interviews are media interviews. Because it's media conducting the interview.
Yeah.
So, you know, this happens a lot. I'm sure it happens in your day job where two different things are both called the production report. And somebody will say, hey, do you have the production report? And I said, well, I thought Larry was building that together. And they're like, no, Larry's building the production report. From you, we need the production report.
Because there's such a big difference.
Yes. Yeah. And as I say this, I literally had this problem on my day job within the past 10 days.
Oh, wow.
It was not called the production report, but I'm protecting the anonymity.
Right. It's TPS
report. I'm just
report,
saying,
right?
They love
TPS
to fly
reports.
And it shows. My employer deserves a little bit of privacy from this, but
yeah, of course.
But we did not want to say media interviews and have people say, well, I'm approved for a media interview for Babs Tarr because I'm media, and have that be confused with an interview which is conducted in our interview room.
Right.
And now we have... I mean, this is really talking baseball stuff, guys.
Yeah, I'm sure we're boring everybody right now. They're like, get to the guests already, jeez.
Yeah.
Matt Smith is going to be at Dragon Con. Yay!
Oh, not just Matt Smith. We have Karen Gillan. We have Alex Kingston. We have so many guests from Doctor Who, so many guests from all over the spectrum. I'm sure you got your interview update this morning, did you not?
Yes, yep. I'm definitely checking out that email, right? I'm looking at it as we speak. And of course, some big Star Trek guests, I guess, celebrating the 30th anniversary of The Next Generation. I mean, you got Jonathan Frakes, Michael Dorn, Gates McCann. I mean,
Even Carl Urban.
It's basically almost the whole bridge except for Patrick.
Well, it is still a month away. Who knows what I'm saying? And maybe I'm bluffing a little bit. Maybe I know something. Who knows? I don't know anything, guys. I'll be honest. So, but yes, you mentioned Nathan Fillion. We're always happy when Firefly guests come.
Of course, yeah.
Unfortunately, Peter Mayhew had to cancel yesterday. I just found out last evening, very late. Man, John Barrowman coming back, you know, if you go tie back, we've got Rose Tyler coming, and, you know, some of the guests that are a little bit, maybe not necessarily associated with the biggest franchises, John Heder's coming for the first time from Napoleon Dynamite, I hope he dances for us, I really do. You know, I believe his mom's going to Dragon Con, too.
Oh, wow.
Well, one of the...
Well, hold on a second. Are you not a Napoleon Dynamite fan?
No, I am not.
The running gag in Napoleon Dynamite is to say your mom and then complete the sentence.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. That totally went over our heads. Sorry.
Sorry. Let's try that again.
I know that for me, I mean, I'm definitely going to, you know, love to see Matt Smith, and I'm definitely going to want to get a picture with him. The one celebrity I'm looking forward to the most for Dragon Con is
Gil Gerard.
No.
Oh, why not? Gil's awesome.
Actually, it's Megan Follows.
Oh.
Interesting.
And you know why? Because I grew up watching Anne of Green Gables. She is Anne Shirley to me.
Ah.
Yes, she is. She is indeed. And to me also.
I love that woman just because of that miniseries.
Awesome.
I mean, I've read the books. I've seen just about every remake that you could ever see, and nobody could ever pull that character off like she did.
No. She makes Prince Edward Island seem cool.
I know. I can't wait to meet her.
And folks in Prince Edward Island, we love you. You're fantastic. We're not making fun of you. We're just talking about how much cooler it is with Anna Green Gables.
Yes.
Like I watched the new Anne with an E series, and it just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, we know. You've spent two episodes complaining about that.
Ranting about it. I just hated it.
So,
I want to throw out a couple that are exciting to me.
Yep.
And that is with the 20-year anniversary of Starship Trooper, being able to bring in Casper Van Diem, Dina Meyer, and Patrick Muldoon.
Oh, cool.
It's going to be amazing. It's just wonderful. This is a cast that loves their involvement with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you love Starship Troopers, whether you don't love it,
it's a cult.
Yep. And you know, a few years back when Riff Tracks did it, the cast got so involved. They were tweeting about it. They were so happy to be made fun of in this way. And it's just wonderful. And that also leads me to the next, is that we have one of the Riff Track folks coming. We have Bill Corbett, and we have Trace Ballew and TV's own Frank coming from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yes. The Mads. The original Mads.
Nice. Yes.
All right, do you guys watch the CW shows?
Yes.
One of the things that we're really excited about, and one of my fandoms that I like a lot, are the CW DC shows.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we've got a number of guests from Arrow. We've got, of course, John Barrowman representing not just Doctor Who, but also Arrow.
Right.
And we have Paul Blackthorne, a personal favorite of mine from his work on the Dresden Files. And also, he played a bad guy in one of my favorite Bollywood films, Lagan. Every time he comes to Dragon Con, I carry around my DVD copy of Lagan, hoping to find him and get a chance to stand online to get it signed. And we have Ashley Scott, also from Arrow, but For those of you who've enjoyed science fiction for more than a few years, she was the co-star of the first season of a little show called Dark Angel.
Oh.
It's a personal favorite of mine, as
Dark Angel.
People in my department know. So we're pretty excited to see her coming. Guys, there are so many guests. I can't sit here and recite them. And if I do, it sounds like a Catholic benediction. So what I'm going to do is recommend to everybody go to www.drancon.org, click on the Who to See button, and you will see the guests. But I will tease you with this one more guest. It was just announced that Katie Sackhoff will be joining us. That came too late to make it to our press release that we got out to you this morning, but it's pretty exciting. And, you know, we have Buffy guests like Claire Kramer. We've got so many great comic artists and writers. And somebody who is an interesting guest at DragonCon. And we'll leave with this and go look at the rest. www.DragonCon.org. Scott Adsit. Let me tell you, Scott Adsit played Pete on 30 Rock. He created Moral Oral. And my daughter ran into him at a comic book convention in another state. And what was he doing? He was shopping for comic books for real and just enjoying the convention and shopping.
That's awesome.
And my daughter talked to him. She was 15 or 16 at the time. He gave her the time of day, and he was gracious. And that's the type of thing that a dad never forgets.
Well, Dan, we know you have to run, so we just want to say thank you for joining us and giving us the lowdown. If anybody has anything else they want to find out about DragonCon, what is that address again?
www.dragoncon.org. It's more than guests. It's becoming part of this amazing family. We'd love to have you as a member.
Absolutely. Definitely. We're going to be telling everybody about DragonCon for at least for the next few weeks to get everybody ready to go. An estimated 82,000 people are expected at this year's DragonCon. It's going to be crazy.
Absolutely. Largest parade in Atlanta. Well-respected, loved comic book and pop art alley. We have an art show, and we didn't even get to talking about the fact that we have a film festival within DragonCon. So many amazing voice actors this year. So many amazing people coming, and so many friends for you to meet.
Yep, definitely. And if there's anything you love in the sci-fi pop culture, it's at DragonCon. Just come.
Anything.
Whatever it is.
You name it, it's there.
There's even furries.
And if there's a podcast you should listen to, this is Dan Carroll, Media Relation Director for DragonCon, recommending Transmissions from Atlantis. Thank you all.
Oh, yeah. Now we got that one. All right. Thank you, Dan.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant geekery? Redonkulous? let's not go with shrink. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic.
Red leader, I'm sorry. Stay on topic. I can't say it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable, brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
All right, folks. So for this past weekend, we had the opportunity to actually see Valerian, and
I was so disappointed to see that it had bombed in the box office because the reviews that were coming back from the critics honestly were not good at all. But we went to go see the film anyway because, you know...
Sometimes the critics are wrong.
Yeah, sometimes the critics are wrong. And I've been waiting to see this for probably well over a year. I mean, we've been seeing previews for this forever.
And we've been talking about it on the podcast for quite some time, too. So obviously we were going to go see it, no matter what anybody said.
So as far as visuals, the film is as visually stunning as we expected it to be.
It is a visual buffet,
basically. Yes, it is a visual buffet for your eyes.
Yes. And what was it that you told me? That there was one report that there was at least 5,000 different alien species in this show?
Yes.
I mean, and it's... Here's the thing about Valerian. I thought it had a great story. I actually enjoyed the story. A lot of the critics said, oh, it's kind of plotting plot. And
that there's no plot. It has a plot.
It has a plot, and I didn't see it plotting at all. I just thought it was a slow simmer to get to where it needed to be, but... That's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, there's a lot of great shows that do that kind of thing. So I actually thought that was great. Obviously, the visuals and special effects were top-notch, as best as you can get. I mean, it was Avatar good. I mean, it was really, really stunning.
Yeah. Mind you, this is from the same director who brought us Fifth Element.
Right.
So it has a lot of that same vibe to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So where some of the sci-fi stuff is a little over the top, but I kind of love that style.
Yeah. And as sci-fi fans, we love when sci-fi goes over the top. I mean, we like the technobabble. We like all that kind of, you know, where they have alien species with their own language and their world building with that kind of stuff. We love that crap.
Yeah, and it's not just that. It's the costumes, the special effects makeup that mm-hmm. people are wearing is just absolutely amazing. I thought the dialogue wasn't as great as it could have been, but it still had a lot of funny one-liners.
Well, see, here's the thing. And this is where Valerian falls for me. And it basically, I don't know if it was necessarily the dialogue or the people that were delivering the dialogue. Because I had a very big problem with the young actor that played Valerian. I didn't think he was very good. The young lady that played Laurelee, who was also the Enchantress in Suicide Squad, I thought she was fine. She did okay, but she was a little stiff too. And bottom line, there was absolutely no chemistry between Valerian and Laurelee, and they're the core of the movie. It's based on a comic series called Valerian and Laurelee. You know, it's them together. It's supposed to be their relationship that's supposed to be the big thing. And for me... There was absolutely no chemistry between either one.
Yeah, you told me that you felt that their relationship felt forced.
Yeah, very much so. Even in, you know, spoiler alert, there's a big kiss at the end between Valerian and Laurelee, big shocker. But even that, you know, big, momentous kiss at the end was kind of like, meh, you know?
Well, there I don't agree with you. I thought that interaction at the end was okay.
I didn't feel the passion from it, is what I'm saying. And, you know, in that kind of relationship, you would expect some kind of sparks or chemistry. You know, kind of like, was it Mr. and Mrs. Jones with...
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. You could feel the smoldering between it.
Well,
you know
there's
I mean?
A reason for that. They actually... started to have an affair during that film.
Of course. and you know, I mean, and a lot of the other great, you know, Hollywood romances that where you've seen it in film where the actors can make you believe that they can't think of anything but each other.
Yeah.
But I just didn't buy it from these two. And for me, that really hurt the movie itself simply because the movie was built on their relationship, and I didn't believe their relationship for a second. So that's kind of a big, big problem for me. But other than that, I thought everything else about the movie was fantastic. But I struggled with.
I mean, there was a lot going on in this film, so I can understand why they wouldn't have incorporated the whole time travel aspect of the original graphic novel.
Right.
Because there is time travel in that, because Laurelee is not... from that time period. She's actually from Revolutionary France, if my memory serves.
And let me tell you, the way that the actress played Laurelee, she didn't play her as a French girl, so...
No, yeah. She didn't. So I think they kind of steered away from that aspect of the graphic novel a little bit. But overall, I really, really enjoyed the film. I enjoyed it more than The Mummy.
Yes, I'll agree with that.
And for me, it's definitely going to be a Blu-ray buy. And I'm going to like pair this up with The Fifth Element. Because there's a lot of the reasons why I love The Fifth Element is also why I love Valerian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the actor, the acting and the personalities in The Fifth Element is so much superior to what we have in Valerian.
Agreed.
And so, had the acting been a little bit better, then the movie would have been picture perfect and it would have been a classic. But I think because of the delivery of the actor that played Valerian, and you know the actress that played Laurelee, that kind of hurt the film and. It may appeal to those overseas. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Valerian does very well in the overseas box office. But I think to Hollywood audiences and, you know, American audiences, it just wasn't going to play.
All right, so on a scale of 1 to 10, where will you give this?
I'm going to give it a 7. I'm giving it a...
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 7 on the strength of the special effects... of the story, but I have to dock it for the acting.
See, I think you're being a little harsh. I'm giving it a 9 because I...
A 9?
Even though I do agree with you on... In regards to Valerian being, you know, wooden, but as far as the relationship, I didn't find it as unrealistic as you did.
Hmm.
And I guess that's just a matter of opinion, but I didn't think... That the passion was as non-existent as you think it is, especially towards the end. Towards the beginning of the film, yes, they were just being flirtatious and that was it. But it was progressing as the movie went on, and then we got to the end point, and then for me, there was definitely a lot more passion there. So for me, I'd give it a 9. I don't understand why so many people were bashing it so bad.
Yeah, to me, they were just delivering lines and not really putting any effort or any kind of... passion behind the delivery of those lines. So that's why it struggled for me. All right, let's move on to War of the Planet of the Apes, and basically the whole Planet of the Apes, not necessarily the old classic series or the Mark Wahlberg one, but just this trilogy of the Caesar story.
Well, I've seen the classic films. I've seen the Mark Wahlberg film. For me, the one thing I always had trouble is that the origins of how this world and this universe came about was never really fully explained.
Mm-hmm.
What I loved about this trilogy is that they lay it out for you exactly how all of this began.
Yep.
And not only was it credible, it was realistic, and it was completely plausible.
Yep. Here's how good Rise of the Planet of the Apes was. James Franco couldn't even ruin it. And James Franco ruins everything. I'm sorry, but he does. And, you know, so Rise was excellent. Excellent movie. Totally enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun to watch. And it was such a plausible thing, you know, that they're searching for the cure for Alzheimer's, searching for things to kind of re-stimulate the brain. And they're testing it on monkeys and apes and whatnot. And it totally makes sense that that could trigger, you know, a super intelligent ape and in turn also start a human disease that makes all the humans stupid.
Yep. So you have the first mutation of this virus that cures Alzheimer's unfortunately only gets to a certain point and then it stops working.
Right.
So then the James Franco character goes back to the drawing boards and he makes another version of this virus. Well, this virus definitely makes the monkeys a whole lot smarter, but, or let's use the right term, apes.
Yep.
Because they're not monkeys. But then it kills the humans.
Yep. It's this fatal disease. Yep.
And this disease we find out in the second film, which we'll get to that.
Yep. Let's go ahead and go there. Yep.
All right. So then we get to Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Where, you know, Caesar has now been living in the woods with his peeps.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the population in the world has perished, and they're all trying to survive.
They're just trying to survive at this point. It's like post-apocalyptic, basically, is what it is.
Exactly. So you have this one ape, Coda, who is not wanting to play by the rules.
Well, in Coda's defense, Coda was tortured basically as a lab animal in the lab that actually created the apes, the Planet of the Apes, right? Mm-hmm. And so he has a grudge against the against humans. And when some humans show some warlike tendencies, he decides to go all out and attack the humans and basically takes over the San Francisco settlement. And, of course, that sets up War of the Planet of the Apes, because once Caesar retakes power, the survivors of that settlement had called out for help, and an army regiment came in, and that's what sets up War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yep.
And that's where we also find out that the virus mutated to make all the humans stupid.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, because not only did the virus mutate, it's not killing humans anymore, but now it's dumbing them down.
Yeah, they can't speak anymore. They're basically the roles are completely reversed, where, you know, the apes are hyper intelligent and the humans are animal like.
But what's cool about this virus is that on top of that, it's starting to affect apes that were never part of the genetics program.
Right.
So apes that were coming from zoos or other parts of the world are being affected by the virus. Mind you, they're not as intelligent.
And how are they affected? They are actually given intelligence.
Yes.
So that kind of explains why the entire ape population suddenly became intelligent. And of course, it's kind of funny you say they're not as intelligent as the other apes, but the one ape that we met that kind of revealed this... could speak. Well, most of the other apes can't speak, so maybe he's even more intelligent.
That is true. It's possible that his education is just limited because it was only just him.
The bottom line on it, though, is that basically, if you really think about it, War of the Planet of the Apes built on Dawn of the Planet. War of the Planet of the Apes built on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes built on Rise. And each segment, each film of the trilogy built upon itself and was absolutely better than the last.
It was flawless.
Yes. And that's how you execute a trilogy. You want the first movie to be kind of like the foundation, the next movie to build on that foundation and be better than that first movie, and then the third one to wrap it all up and make it fantastic. And that's exactly what they did.
It is so rare to see a franchise where the consecutive movies that come after the first one are actually better
and build upon it, yeah,
than the last one that came out. And like you said, it built on it. And this is one of those franchises. If you have not seen it, you have to go and watch this series.
And, you know, the cool thing is, since we have watched the classic movies, there are so many throwbacks throughout the entire trilogy, but especially in the third one, back to the original Planet of the Apes, that, you know, for fans of the originals, it's like, oh, I see what you did there. Oh, yep, there you go. You know, so it's kind of cool that the directors and the producers went to so much trouble to kind of highlight some of those things, not just throw it in your face kind of deal, but, you know, just subtly give you that little Easter egg of, you know, kind of setting up to where you can see how it all leads into the Planet of the Apes of the 1960s.
Yeah, exactly. And now all of the origins from those classic films make so much more sense.
It all makes sense now, exactly. So the question now is, what are we going to rate it?
10.
Yeah.
The franchise overall.
Yep, the franchise overall and the third movie, right?
Yep.
I gotta agree. The franchise overall was a 10 for sure. And the last movie was a 10 as well. I mean, it was a fantastic movie. It built upon the other two. All three of them were fantastic together and work in unison. And I thought they were fabulous. All right, coming up next.
Doctor Who!
Who are you?
Ooh.
Ooh. Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we're going to watch every episode of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Every episode?
Every single one.
In order?
From an unearthly child to, you know, the future. And we're going to do it in a podcast that we call...
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
WatchYourRassilon.com. And we're also a part of the ESO Network. So check us out or whatever.
Please.
Stay Wrestle Awesome.
Stop trying to make Wrestle Awesome a thing.
Nope.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated.
No! No! When I say no, you turn back around. Hey! I'm going to be dead in a few hours, so before I go, let's have this out, you and me, once and for all. Winning? Is that what you think it's about? I'm not trying to win. I'm not doing this because I want to beat someone, or because I hate someone, or because I want to blame someone. It's not because it's fun. God knows it's not because it's easy. It's not even because it works, because it hardly ever does. I do what I do because it's right, because it's decent. And above all, it's kind. It's just that. Just kind. If I run away today, good people will die. If I stand and fight, some of them might live. Maybe not many, maybe not for long. Hey, you know, maybe there's no point in any of this at all, but it's the best I can do. So I'm going to do it, and I will stand here doing it till it kills me. You're going to die too. Someday. How would that be if you thought about it? What would you die for? Who I am. It's where I stand, where I stand. It's where I fall. Stand with me. These people are terrified. Maybe we can help. A little. Why not? Just to the end. Just be kind.
You guys know that music, and it's time for our Doctor Who segment. And joining us now is Dr. Scott Vigay. Scott, welcome.
Hello, everyone.
And we thought we might not have a lot of information on Doctor Who, but dang if we didn't have a whole bunch of information on Doctor Who all of a sudden.
A lot of news that just coming out.
Of course, you know, San Diego Comic-Con definitely helps out because there's always big announcements at San Diego. And, of course, at San Diego, they released the Christmas special trailer. And, Scott, what did you think of the trailer? I thought it was very interesting.
I loved it. Talk about going out with a bang. To see the first Doctor and the current Doctor together is just really awesome. And then that one little bit where you get to see inside the first Doctor's TARDIS with the Rondles. The yes. Rondles are back!
Yes.
It's the white round things.
Yes, do you think they just kept the same set and maybe they had just had it handy?
Yeah, I think what it is this is the set that was recreated for the David Bradley documentary.
Yes.
And I think they used that at the end of the 50th anniversary where you have the and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
when the desktop was freaking out because there were too many Doctors in the in the console room.
Yep.
Right. And I think they also used it to stand in for Lady Mi's TARDIS. I think that's also the same set that they kind of redressed a little bit. Given, let's put it this way, given the time and effort they put into creating it for the documentary, I believe the words from the BBC were, let's hold on to that thing. they spent a tireless amount of energy to recreate that. And for such a simple set, well, you know, the part of the problem is that, you know, the walls might be simple and, you know, when originally made, everything wobbled and all that stuff, but that's not what happened in 2013. You know what I mean? They spent a lot of money. So I think that it, you know, they pulled it out of mothballs and all that. So it's just good to see it. And, you know, what's so funny about it is that it felt instantly Doctor Who to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've loved what they've done with the TARDIS since then. Some designs better than others, but yes. The wall of roundels will forever be Doctor Who for me.
Yeah. What about you, Rita?
It looks like Billy Pott's going to be making a comeback again.
Yep.
Maybe her last.
Yep, probably her last go, but, you know, it's going to be nice to see Bill again. And one of the things that I really loved about it was seeing that transition from the classic Doctor Who footage to David Bradley, and it was practically seamless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was really cool, the way that they did that.
And, absolutely perfect.
And of course, I think this goes to your theory of the crazier the doctor's hair gets, the more likely they're about to regenerate. I don't know what's going on with Capaldi's dude, but it's like all out there now.
Yeah, yes, it is.
What is with that with modern Doctor Who? It's amazing. You know, something's up with that. You know, it makes you wonder what is his current acting job, right? What is Peter Capaldi doing now?
Right. Apparently it's something cursing because he was complaining he hasn't been able to curse for the last 4 years.
Well, it's like getting the job of Santa Claus, right? You know, all of a sudden you have a great responsibility on your shoulders. So
I wonder how hard that was for him when he first started, because, you know, he just had come off of from the thick of it.
Yep.
And was it difficult to hold in all those F words while filming?
I have to imagine, you know, he was so used to doing it. I don't know if I haven't noticed I haven't watched any of the gag reel or anything, but I wonder if there's a few gag reels where he drops an F bomb or a few colorful metaphors.
Well, I don't know about any sort of blooper reels or anything like that, but I do know that he said in an interview shortly after he got the part that there was this weird transition period where he had just been announced as the Doctor, but he still had a bunch of Thick of It fans coming up to talk to him and wanting him to swear at them. And, you know, a week earlier he would do it because, you know, what fun, right?
Right.
But now he was also the Doctor, and he just didn't want, an out-of-context, you know, quote or an out-of-context fan encounter to happen. So,
Before he was in a very adult-oriented television series, and now he's in a family series, so he has to set an example.
Yep. But I totally get what you're saying, because, I mean, last thing he wants is to see a video on YouTube or something of the Doctor cussing out a fan, you know?
Right.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, even if it was James Bond, it wouldn't be as bad, but it's the Doctor, for God's sake.
Right.
I think that was the added problem. But I just think that it's kind of awesome that, you know, earlier in his career, you could have gotten him to come up to him and get him to swear at you.
Yeah.
for your answering machine message, you know?
Yeah, right. All right, so let's keep this moving. The Doctor's daughter is going to be on Big Finish. Georgia Tennant is going to be reprising her role as Ginny.
I can't wait for this because The Doctor's Daughter was always one of my favorites. And we've always wondered what happened to Jenny. You know, Jenny could have had her own side series, mm-hmm. and we probably would have watched it.
Now she does.
And now she does.
What do you think?
Yeah, and all hail Big Finish. Thank goodness that they are, you know, firmly allowed to do basically anything now. And I'm so glad they got a chance to do it. And, you know, I'm sure that Georgia Tennant could pull off the part today if she wanted to. It hasn't been that long.
Right.
But it's been just long enough to where I'm sure she's kind of happy she gets to do it on audio.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, because there's always those questions, you know, being the fact that she's related to the Doctor genetically, you know, how does she age, or, you know, did she regenerate, and all those other questions.
Right.
You know, but this way, it's kind of cool, and Big Finish has proven that they can do Doctor Who and any other side version. So, you know, I'm thrilled. I can't wait.
Yep, and it's obviously a matter of time before, once Jenna Coleman's done doing the Queen Victoria thing, you know that Lady Me and Claire is going to be having their own Big Finish series.
That would be cool. Yeah,
exactly, because what S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, you know, what, there's another 7 episodes of Game of Thrones left, and then they're all set.
Yeah, so she's going to need something to do, too.
Yeah.
So any other thoughts on the Doctor's daughter coming to Big Finish?
Or no, I just think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think she'll be a lot like any of their other kind of box sets where it's action, it's adventure, she's solving problems. You know, they kind of have a good idea with her character from that. Where they take it from there, that's what I want to know. You know, what's going to set her apart from all the other kind of adventures that they've done this with some of the other companions and other people.
Yep, so let's keep this moving. We're going to go to Chris Marshall. Well, you know what the funny thing about Chris Marshall is, he was rumored to be the favorite, to be the Doctor.
For a really long time.
Now, he may turn out to be the Doctor's companion.
Well, no. Who was it that said it was going to be a guy?
Well,
was it you?
Well, we both said it was going to be a guy, Scott and I. Yeah, we thought it was going to be a Beefcake, though, not Chris Marshall.
Yeah, I didn't
geeky looking ginger. You know, no offense to geeky looking gingers out there, but you know, he exactly doesn't exude Beefcake.
No.
Well, so here's the question: he's either a Weasley or he's Turlough's grandson.
Right.
Right.
He could be Turlough's grandson, definitely.
Why not? Right. That will be the big reveal. See, you know, the big joke is that up to this point, every companion has ultimately turned out to be the savior of the universe in one form or another, or gets transformed into such. I think the big reveal at the end of this season is going to be that he's Turlough's grandson.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be funny. Well, I don't know how likely it is for Chris Marshall to be the Doctor's companion. Frankly, I don't think Chris Marshall's going to be in Doctor Who. I think his opportunity to be in Doctor Who kind of ended with the Doctor competition going to Jodie Whittaker. So,
yeah,
I would be really surprised if Chris Marshall turned out to be the companion. But you know what? Stranger things have happened with this show. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
One other interesting thing I want to talk about in regards to the companion is, of course, this week Michelle Gomez was at a convention. By the way, plays Missy. She had dropped some line about that Doctor Who's going to be all girl now, where and the way that the press ran with it was that Jodie Whittaker's Doctor is going to be a lesbian or attracted to women.
Yeah, man.
I don't buy it. I number one, Michelle Gomez has no knowledge about what's going to happen in the next series because she's not going to be part of it.
No.
At least that we know of. So
yeah.
So why would she have inside information on that? Plus, why would she say it at a convention, which nobody would ever do? I think she was making an off-the-cuff, you know, joke, and the press just kind of ran with it.
Well, yeah, I think the press is just looking for some way to keep controversy alive. So, yeah. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do. I don't care. But, I mean, another way to spin it would have been after, you know, so many years of being male, why not? It took a while to for everything to realign. I don't care. I mean, it's just, no matter how you looked at it, it's a non-starter.
Yeah.
Right?
And for me, I think it's just silly. So,
yeah.
Whether she's turns out to be attracted to women or not, it doesn't really matter to me.
But yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, the Doctor should be asexual.
Yeah.
Right.
And it shouldn't really matter, you know, whether the companion's a male or a female. So.
That's right. It shouldn't matter, and it's a non-story point, and you know, it mattered as much as it mattered for Bill. Well, it mattered for Bill's sake, but it didn't really affect the stories you told with Bill. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so it should be the same thing. If she's going to be a lesbian, great. If she's not going to be a lesbian, great. I don't care. Just do good stories.
Yes.
Come on, people. Just do good stories.
Exactly.
You know?
So the last thing we're going to talk about Doctor Who this week is, of course, the sad passing of Deborah Watling. Deborah, of course, was Victoria in Second Doctor's run. So tough loss for one of the original companions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of her stuff is in the Lost stories.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a reference to her in The Two Doctors about learning calligraphy and, or something like graphology or something like that. And, you know, that's why she's not currently with the Doctor and Jamie.
Yep.
But beyond that, we haven't really seen much references to her. When they do a bunch of, you know, roll-up of past companions, they usually go to Sarah Jane or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, she had a massive contribution to Doctor Who that kind of disappeared.
Which explains why I don't really remember her all that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I remember Victoria as being somebody that was super intelligent and wasn't your typical damsel in distress kind of companion. I mean, she did right. have every once in a while, you know, she'd get herself into trouble, but she kind of exuded a little bit more intelligence while Jamie was kind of the brawn, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. whose comprehension of the world around him fluctuated at the speed of plot.
Yes, speed of plot, exactly. Exactly. So, very sad to hear of Deborah Watling's passing, and, you know, condolences to her family and everything for her loss. But you got to keep on keeping on, and that's basically what we'll do with Doctor Who, for sure. All right, Scott, before we go, there was a special announcement regarding one of our close friends who recently passed away, Sasha Zuba. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what one of Sasha's last things that he got a chance to do?
Oh, sure. So one of the last productions that Sasha had a chance to be a part of and actually star in was a steampunk version of The Secret Garden. And this was something that he was really, really, really proud of. I mean, Sasha was always put in 1,000% into everything he ever did, and mm-hmm. he always supported every production that he did, from Dr. Geek's Laboratory to, you know, his 5 seconds on the latest Vacation movie. But the one that I think will ultimately be something that will be very special will be The Secret Garden. I mean, yep. you know, the set photos that he was able to show of him in costume, he, you know, this movie just said, this was for you, Sasha.
Yes.
In fact, I was surprised that it wasn't actually in his wardrobe. You know, right? Like that. Right?
That he actually had to wear a costume, because basically it looked like Sasha's stuff.
Yes, it's, you know, it's a man with a waistcoat and formal clothes. That's Sasha. Anyway, but it looked great, and he had nothing but praise to say, and sadly, it was one of the last things he did before he got sick.
Yeah.
And because he was such a big part of it. In fact, I wouldn't hesitate to say that he was one of the stars of it.
Yeah.
In fact, you see him on the cover art. If you go to The Secret Garden on Facebook or on Twitter at The Secret Garden Movie, then you'll be able to find it. You'll be able to tell. It's the one with the all the kind of steampunk color scheme.
Yep.
And he's the one guy on their cover. He's standing between the two women on either side of him. So if that's Sasha right there. And the big news is that their film is actually going to the FilmQuest 2017 event in Provo, Utah, September 8th through the 16th. And so that's their world premiere, and that's awesome. And I know a lot of us would love to go to that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Provo, Utah isn't always the easiest place to get to.
It's not driving distance, is what we're saying.
No. But
as soon as it comes available, you know, online or streaming or what have you, you know, his friends and his family are definitely going to jump all over that thing.
Oh yeah! In fact, if we don't do some sort of screening, I what type of friends are us?
Exactly.
But I can't wait to see this. And again, you know, congratulations to The Secret Garden. It's really great. You can find them at findthesecretgarden.com or The Secret Garden Movie on Twitter, and then look for The Secret Garden on Facebook, and look for Sasha Zuba. And that is SachaDzuba.
Yep.
And there you go.
He's one of a million.
Yep.
So let's go ahead and wrap this up. thank you everybody for joining us for this particular episode of Transmissions from Atlantis. Scott, thank you as always for joining us as well.
Thank you guys.
Now, Scott, we won't be hearing from you for a few weeks because you're going on a nice vacation.
Yep, going to be visiting some family. So we're going to be away where the internet is a little hard to get to.
So sometimes that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Unplug for a little while, right?
Right.
Yep, so we'll have to go it alone again like we used to with Doctor Who, but I think we'll be okay. And of course, anything new comes up with Doctor Who, we will be jumping right on that. And we'll be talking about Game of Thrones. We'll be talking about what the mess is with Twin Peaks. And then, of course, we'll also probably be reviewing the new Stephen King adaption, The Dark Tower, which is coming out soon.
Plus many more Dragon Con interviews.
So that's what we have coming up. Until then...
Allons-y.
Allons-y. Goodbye, everybody.
Allons-y. I should say allons-y. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Allons-y. And then... it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say Alonzo, Alonzo, every time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.